stories. So I want to tell you a couple of stories about the church. Recently, I preached at my home church. I had not been back since 1985, June 20th, the day I was ordained into Christian ministry. But you would have to admit, that's a long time. Okay? So 32 years. Now, the last time they saw me, I was a 25-year-old. They knew me by my nickname. My nickname, like the car, the four-wheel drive Jeep. Okay? That's my nickname. And so, and I'm not embarrassed with that name, because that's the name, because there were, I'm the eighth Joseph Edward Mills in a row. And at one point, there were several Josephs alive at the same time. So if you go in a room, you say, Joe, a bunch of people turn around. So they started calling us all by different names. My grandfather was Joe. My dad became Joey. I became Jeep. Okay, fine, whatever. You know. And so when I got ordained, my home minister, he started laughing. Because they went to lay hands on me, which was part of the ordination process. And a whole bunch of clergy and lay people came forward. And I'll tell you, it was hot. I remember that because there were so many hands. And people couldn't reach in, so they were hands on people's shoulders. And Pastor Ken, my home pastor, was the one blessed with the opportunity to actually name me for the first time as a pastor. And he went there to name me, and he goes, and you are named, and he took his hand up and he started laughing. He says, do I call you Pastor G? And the whole congregation started to laugh, and he puts his hand back on me. No, Reverend Joseph Edward Mills III, you know, whatever. And then, nobody calls me Reverend Joseph. My first church, I was called Reverend Joe, and the kids in town, it was the ultimate compliment, called me the Rev. It's like really cool. Like, then I came here, and I was called Pastor Joe, but the kids called me PJ. That's the ultimate compliment. I love that. Now it's just whatever it is. My home church. I come back to visit and to preach at the day of their 100th anniversary. They don't even know the exact date of their 100th anniversary. They knew what year. It was 1917. Nobody has a record. They lost it. It was the merger of two churches, a Methodist church and a Congregational church. By the way, do American history, 1917, what was happening? First World War, big time. People were going away. My grandfather, my Papa Ferguson, who was a model for Jesus to me, fought in World War I as a Marine in France. So I'm preaching on a day that we don't know if it's really the anniversary or not. And I remembered stories. I came to this church building and saw people I hadn't seen in 32 years. See, they had seen me as a skinny little kid that's now, well, not skinny, not little. I used to have really beautiful blonde hair. It's not blonde anymore. No big deal. I was seeing people that when I met them, they were 50. Now they were 85. 60-year-old people who are now 95. The one person I wanted to see had just died. Paul Zahner. Paul was 103. We were trading Christmas cards every year. Paul was the guy who at the church, you want in your church, Paul. Paul was the man who every week greeted everybody in the back, and you knew it was real. He took your hand, a cheerful good morning to you. He took careful, lovely service to his wife, Alice. Alice was never well. I never knew her healthy. He took care of her every day. He was a model of Jesus the Christ. I missed seeing him. He was gone. But I told everybody as I started the service, a cheerful good morning to you. Half the congregation started to cry because they knew exactly who I was at that moment. I told them a story about what ministry should not be like, and it was one of my home ministers. He didn't like children at all. And every child in church knew it. And we didn't like coming and listening to the sermon, because the sermons weren't nice. And he liked to go to the pulpit. It was on this side. The pulpit was on this side. And it was really high in the air, so he could look down at you and tell you how unimportant you were and how important he was. And during every sermon, he would boom, boom, boom like this. Kids didn't want to come to church. And one Sunday, it was in the middle of the summer. It was really hot. It was really miserable. And we're all sitting there in church, and he's preaching. Oh, by the way, he used to preach an average of an hour and a half every sermon. And I had to sit through it twice. How many of you would like to hear an hour and a half sermon twice? I don't see any hands going up. So he's in the middle of this sermon, really horrible sermon. Mean, bad, boom, boom, boom. And he gets to this really big point, and he starts to make it. He knew he was building it up because his voice was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And he goes to make this point, and all of a sudden, the first window, those shades you pull down? It was much taller than these were. Not twice the size, I'm not going to exaggerate, but it was much taller than those. And they had those lines because it was such a hot day. All of a sudden, he makes a speech of, and the line goes, he looks at us. He goes back an entire paragraph. So now we're not only going to hear the hour and a half sermon, but we have to hear this whole thing again. And he builds it up and he goes, the second one goes, unlike anybody else, I've told some tall tales in my life. This is literally true. And as I'm telling it, I got a guy in the congregation that I knew. He was nodding, he's laughing, because he was there that same day, sitting near us. And he remembered the story. He knows exactly what's coming next. Half the people there that don't know because they're newer members. And so I told the story. He goes and goes back a whole paragraph one more time. Goes and builds up. He gets, the third one goes, he takes his notes, closes them, says, God clearly doesn't want me to finish this sermon. It was his only standing ovation he ever got. During my lifetime, I have learned, as have you, examples of true ministry and examples of what we should not be like in the church. I'm going to start with something very important that I already know you know, but I want to say it because it'll set up the scripture for today. Just because you're a member of a church does not make you Christian. Would you agree with that? Okay? I know people who are joining organizations and they don't show up, they don't help. I'm part of a theater group. It's got 300 people in it, but I can tell you right now, only 80 of them really do work. And the other 220 show up when they want to be cast in a play. And so it's very frustrating because the rest of us have to do an awful lot of extra work to make it work. That's okay, that's part of the deal. I understand that's how the world works. But in the church, church is a little different. The church is not a civic club. It literally is about the transformation of our spirit. Wouldn't you agree? It's about the building of a community to be fundamentally different than the rest of the world, because the rest of the world, the way that they really act, is not good. I've been frustrated this whole last year listening to politics, because the way that people are behaving and the way they actually talk, is that the way you want your kids to behave? It's not the way I want my kids to talk. And it's very frustrating for me. I want them to learn a way that when they go into the world, I will never have to worry about what they say and what they do. Because what they say and do will be guided and molded by us, the church. Oh, I go back now. Remember that first thing I said? Is everybody just because they're a member of the church a Christian? No. So now we go back to the text. Philippians. Inch for inch is the single most beautiful book of the Bible. I would argue this any day of the week. If you're going to start with anybody who is new and doesn't know much about God, it is an excellent book to start with. The book of Genesis is a nice book, but it doesn't work the same way because it doesn't immediately talk about discipleship. Philippians does. And the language of Philippians, if you don't know this, is much like poetry and music. There's so much in it that helps us understand something. But I want to teach you something about Philippians. The church at Philippi is one of the two churches that Paul served that he didn't get kicked out. I don't know that you know that. Almost every one of those letters in Paul, those things he wrote to, the Thessalonians, the Romans, right? All of those stories. He got kicked out of those churches. They didn't like him. Everywhere he went, he was challenging them to live a certain way. And they didn't want to hear it. So they kept pushing him out. And he would write them letters. Corinthians. Corinth, we believe that those two letters are not just two letters. They're probably about seven or eight letters that were put together. It's okay to say that. It doesn't change it at all. But you need to understand, he worked with them over a long period of time, and they were not nice people. They kept fighting over the dumbest things. They fought over what you eat, what you wear. Whose talent is better than somebody else's talent? That would be like the gentleman up front, okay? I was kidding somebody this morning because I walk in and I see guys over here. I see over here, three people over here. Different music than what's going over here. And in the middle, I see two people here starting to get songs together, and none of them were singing the same or playing the same music. And it was funny because I'm trying to listen to one of the songs, but I couldn't do it because I couldn't do it. I started laughing. I walked over and I said, one of us has to stop. I think it's me. In their church, they would have immediately had a fight. Who was the best musician? But not Philippi. There was something about this church. We think it was a smaller church. Philippi was the church that actually worked with the Macedonians, the ones way up north. And if you remember that story in Corinthians, do you remember? I don't know that you all know this, but in 2 Corinthians 8, there's this wonderful story about the generosity that we're supposed to live by. And they use as an example the Macedonians, who, by the way, in the world, are one of the three most poor places in the entire world, even to this day. And the Macedonians were the ones that took the little that they had to help the church in Israel, in Jerusalem, that had been burned down, the people were being persecuted. And this little church helps them, and the Philippians figured it out. This was a church that began to actually model behavior that I would say is the height of what it is to be a church. Now, I'm going to stop out of that for a minute. I talked with your pastor at length. I know that you are going to be studying this text all year. So I thought it would be helpful that the outsider, meaning the guy that's not with you every single week, that's me, could come and just talk about it for a little bit. Because I want you to understand Philippians. Philippians wants us to be church, to embody behavior that is worthy of the gospel of Jesus. In fact, in the first chapter, it says something like this, that whether I see you or am absent and hear about you. Ah, I love that. In other words, when I'm with you, this is what I get. When I'm not with you, I'm getting the same thing. And what I'm getting is behavior that is so Christ-like that Jesus is known by everything I do and everything I say. Which then, when you get to the fourth chapter, the words that you are going to be using all year, what you have learned and heard and seen in me, do. Now I've got to stop. I go back to that first thing. Remember that first thing? Is everybody, just because they're a member of a church, Christ-like? The answer is no. By the way, is anybody here perfect? Because I sure am not. And I try, every year, I try hard to take on one part of my weakness in the gospel. And I try to address it intentionally. Because I believe, as with Philippians, that part of that is that if you catch me on Wednesday night, anywhere, I don't care where it is, if you catch me, I better be the same person that I am on Sunday morning when I'm opening my mouth and saying things to you. So even at my worst, I still want to be good. And at my best, it's just simply that somehow something's happening with me that's so joyful, so giving, so loving that Jesus is known, but I'm not thinking about it at that moment because it's just part of who I am every single day. So I'll tell you a story. A bunch of years back, one of our members, her kids were really being difficult. They're normal kids. They were seeing what society has around. One of them was experimenting with drinking. All of them were smoking. I'm at the restaurant, sitting with Mom. By the way, what is she doing? Say, she's smoking. She is just working. She's a chimney. I could take her home and use her as a fireplace. And she is just cigarette after cigarette after cigarette. And she looks at me and she says, I don't know what to do about my kids. They're smoking. I don't get it. Da, 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 da. I looked at her and I said, and I took the cigarette right from her hand. I said, it might be this. She got really angry with me. By the way, she died a few years ago, but she didn't give me permission to share the story because once we talked about it, she understood it. She said, don't you dare use me as an example. Bull. She put her cigarette down. She said, I'm teaching them this, am I not? I said, yep. I said, and you know what? You have no right to talk to them about not smoking if that's what you're doing all day long every day. I teach our congregation Philippians 4 every single week. I'm convinced it's one of the five greatest scriptures that we have in the Bible. Because in it, it has language that embodies that in order to be Christ's church, we have to actually, I'm going to go back now in the fourth chapter. It doesn't just simply say, hey, what you've learned and heard and seen in me, do. Ah, did you notice what it said just before that? It says, if there is anything worthy, if there is anything worthy of praise, oh, time out. Oh, okay. So now, if I have behavior that matches the gospel, so in other words, there's a discernment tool that is to be used in this text. So when we are in church together, when we are outside of church together, whatever gathering we're at, social, Bible study, ministry, mission, it doesn't matter. Where we are to discern with one another, how are we doing? So that at every moment, when we look at our children and we see what they're doing, the first question we should ask ourselves as parents and as adults is, what is my behavior like right now? Is it worthy of the gospel of Jesus the Christ? Another easy way to do it, it sounds a little trite, but it actually works, is imagine if right now Jesus shows up right in the middle of worship. First of all, I'm not sure we would recognize him. I would hope we would see something. I would hope in the middle of it,
If the next thing that came out of his mouth were, "So how have you been this week?" What if he was literally our next door neighbor? What if he was the shop clerk and we're the one in line? What if he is the waiter at the restaurant that we're eating at? What if he's our co-worker, or our boss, or our employee? What if he is our spouse, or our parent, or our child? I am not saying this out of effect. I am being very clear on what Philippians is about. Philippians dictates that every person you see is an embodiment of God. And if we are to be the church, we are to embody Jesus in such a way that there is never even a remote possibility that anybody can mistake that it's Jesus that's in charge of our life, that it's Jesus who we actually think about, that it's Jesus who guides our actions, our prayers, our thoughts, our language, everything, which makes it then, would you agree with me, actually pretty easy then to be with somebody else, because then they can never mistake who we follow. So I want the kids, that's why when I teach your children, I'm always trying to think, what is the teachable moment? What is the thing about Jesus I want them to learn so when they walk out of the church, they're not like just every other kid. And they become an example of Jesus the Christ for all the other children. I suspect that's why your pastor and your ministry team has chosen this text. Because for the church, it was the church at Philippi who figured it out and actually lived the gospel. And my prayer for our church, notice I'm not saying you, we're one church. For our church, is we will be like them. What you have learned and heard and seen in me, do. And the God of peace will be with you. And let the people say with me together,
Amen.
Amen.